All right. Thank you. Thank you, Cody. All right. So I'm Ron Clark, as Mike said. Mike and Joni and Lori and I go way back. We moved here over 20 years ago. We moved to Portland and Gresham. I preached at Metro Church of Christ for 8 years, and we're very good friends of them. Mike, they were deacons there, and great friends, great supporters. And then we are just a couple of church plants behind you all. So I really, Lori and I have a tremendous amount of respect for Kevin and Brenda. When we heard that they were planting a church, I remember way back then, so that was 12 years ago, I think, because we were at your 10th anniversary meeting. I remember that. And I preached a long time ago when you were at the Grange Hall while Kevin was gone. But we were about a year and a half behind you all. So when Kevin planted, I remember we were thinking, you know, maybe we need to do something like this. And we loved Metro, but it just was, you know, it had grown. It was doing well. But we just really had a heart for, you know, the kind of ministry with abuse and poverty and prostitution and things like that. And I remember Stan Granberg, who helped to start that. We met for coffee one time, and he said, I said, the only option I see is to go back south to a big church and preach, and I'd rather stay here. And he said, I think you need to plant a church. And I said, well, Lori won't go for that. And he goes, well, why don't you go talk with her about it? And because I figured she'd say no, and then I have to worry about it. But went back. She goes, I think it's a great idea, you know. And I was like, oh, that's great. And then our oldest son, Nathan, he's 26 now. He was 13. And I said, well, you know, we got a teenager. So I called one of my professors back at Harding School of Theology, and he said, actually, church plants are the best for teenagers because he said youth groups are more of the problem. He goes, church plants are bad. I thought, well, I guess we have to do it. So we planted in 2007. We left Metro 2006. We planted 2007. So we're a little behind you. And we're, I guess, Renovatus and Agape Church of Christ are two of the oldest church plants with the Kairos Network. And we're small. We're all small, and we're doing a lot of work. But I tell you, you know, it's interesting. And I want to encourage you to support Kevin and Brenda, because it's really tough. Because I grew up reading a lot of books about church growth, and it's all about mega church, it's about big church. And we've always kind of thought, you know, we need to do something different. And now the research is saying big churches aren't doing the kind of work they need to do. It's more the smaller churches. But it's difficult, because I know Kevin and I've talked a lot about, we call it detoxing from our church growth, you know, having to detox from all the stuff we had. And this is important. And this is one thing that I think is key. Advent Conspiracy, we've been doing it for 10 years. We've been doing it since it started, about 2008. We've raised, we do 75% of our contribution goes to Living Water International to plant and put a new well in. And the other 25% goes to one of the domestic violence shelters in our area. So we've done over $32,000 in the 8 years we've been doing Living Water. Thank you. We have a good little congregation, but we've done Hood to Coast, and we've done all of that. But it's energized our folks, because this time of year is a tough time. You know, you think about Christmas. Christmas is, it's a battle. It's a battle with consumerism. The book Advent Conspiracy, Rick McKinley out of Imago Dei has written that. It's a great book that talks about commercialism and how, you know, people are just held by the throat this time of year. And we've been talking this year about presents. Our goal is, we did a $970 contribution today. Hunter was baptized into Christ, our middle son there. And we had a couple people baptized. But what we're hoping to do is rehabilitate wells in Zambia, because Caleb and I were in Malawi this summer with the Teasons from Hazeldale Church of Christ. We were over there working, and Zambia's next to Malawi, and we saw a lot of the fact that they need fresh water. And you think about how much money we spend at Christmas and how such a small percentage of that would solve the water crisis in the world. And that's why we think presence is such an important deal. This is a time of year that we think about presence, not presents. And I think there's some basics with that. If I were to take this guitar and strum A, C, D, and I'll sound it like it would sound, and then you finish the song, okay? Ready? Dun, 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 and it would be, right, okay? That's a basic song. It's a, you know, A, C, D, A, C, E, D. It's a very basic song, very simple. You can go anywhere and you can hear that and you'd go, yeah, I know that song. And the name of the song is?
Milk on the Water by Cream.
Not by Cream.
No, no, not Cream.
No, no, not Cream.
Ouch.
Oh,
who?
Smoke on the Water by, what's the color of Mike's shirt?
Deep Purple.
Deep Purple, okay.
And
it's a song, it's a very basic song. It's a song about, the title of the sermon here is Smoke on the Water, God's Presence Among Us. But it's a song about the burning down of a hotel, I think in Holland, when Deep Purple was there with Frank Zappa and some others. And the song is about the whole destruction and the smoke and the fire. But the point is, it's a very basic song. Anybody can hear it, and they'll know the song. It's what you learn when you learn to play guitar. If you say, I want to play a rock music, then the teacher teaches you that very basic song. It's a very basic concept. But it's interesting that smoke on the water, fire on the sky, is a very basic concept in the ancient world. In the ancient world, it was a symbol of divine presence, or the symbol of God. When the Romans were attacking Jerusalem in 70 AD and were destroying the city, a Roman historian wrote, described it as, the armies came in, there was fire and smoke, and a voice out of heaven said, the gods have left Jerusalem. And so the Romans saw what they did as a very divine act. Of course, we know in the Gospels, Jesus says, you know, I'm coming on the clouds. He was referring to that, the destruction of the temple of Jerusalem. The concept of fire and smoke is a very basic concept in an encounter with God. Now, if you look at the next slide, I didn't get a clicker, so what I do is say, turn, go to the next slide, right? Okay, the next slide, because remember the video's not working, because I gave you the wrong, there you go, all right. Relationship is a very important concept in the Jewish religion. In the book of Exodus chapter 4, how did Moses see God? Do you remember? What was his experience with God? How did he see? A burning bush, right? So there was fire, right? The bush was not consumed. And there was the big statement, take off your sandals, you're on holy ground. So Moses has this encounter with God. He speaks to the fire. And God says, go back and tell the people of Israel, I've heard what's going on. I know what's happening. So Moses and Aaron go back and they show them the signs. But I love this. And they bring all the elders together, and they said everything that Yahweh had said to Moses. He performed the signs before the people. They believed. And when they heard that Yahweh was concerned about them and had seen their misery, they bowed down and worshiped. That's important. When the people of Israel realized God knows what's going on. God knows about our abuse. God knows about our slavery. God knows about our mistreatment. God understands. And the word there, concerned, is the word, the Hebrew word is the word also used in reference to elders who are bishops, the word to oversee, to look, to be concerned, to visit, to be attentive. What's happening here is when they realize that God knows what's going on, they can worship. Now, we use this when we do domestic violence trainings. When I speak around the country or in other countries about domestic violence, we say whenever victims know that God is for them, they can worship. One of the reasons that a lot of women who are survivors of abuse can't worship in churches is because they don't know that God is hearing their voice. And that's why it's so important that we need to create environments where they're safe, because victims can never worship God until they know that God cares about them, that God hears, that God's on their side. This is what's happening in Israel. Moses and Aaron say, God knows what's going on. God's on your side. And they worship. Now, the next slide's an important slide as well, because in that story, throughout the Bible, God has promised to be present. Whenever we turn through the pages through the, whether it's the Hebrew Bible or the Christian scriptures, God promises to be present. God is Immanu. God is with us. God is there. And when the people hear that God is with them, there's this understanding. It's a very basic, it's the you know, A, C, D, A, C, D, E, D. It's that very basic guitar chord. God wants a relationship with us. God is with us. And the next slide, we see this when Moses is talking to the people in Deuteronomy 4. Before they go into the promised land, Moses said, you need to remember something. God spoke to you out of the fire. You heard the sound of words, but you saw no one. Okay? Only a voice. You saw no form of any kind the day Yahweh spoke to you. and at Horeb out of the fire. Therefore, watch yourselves very carefully. In chapter 4 and verse 12, Moses is saying, before you go to the promised land, remember on Mount Horeb when there was, the mountain was shaking and there was smoke and there was fire and you were scared? God was speaking to you. This is what's interesting. Next slide. Nobody else has heard this. Moses tells them, who else has heard God's voice? Who's heard God speaking to them? Remember, they came out of Egypt. They built idols. They built statues. They built pyramids for gods. The only person that would speak to them would either be Pharaoh, who was a representative of God. He was the son of God, son of Ahtamre. Or you might have the priests who would say, this is what our gods say. This is what Adam says. This is what Isis says. But no god spoke to them. There were no idols that spoke. There were no idols with moving parts. Moses said, God spoke to you. And this is a very basic experience. Before they go in the promised land, Moses says, remember, you have this encounter with God. You have this experience with God. You have this very real communication with God. And this is important because as they go into the promised land, and if you've read past Deuteronomy, you know exactly what's going to happen, right? They're going to go into another land, and they're going to sacrifice their children to the god Moloch. They're going to hand their daughters over to the priest to have sex, or their wives to have sex with the priest of Baal in order to have a better crop harvest. They're going to bow down and offer sacrifices to statues. They're going to get caught up in all kinds of things in these other lands. And Moses' take is, remember, you're going to be around statues that don't talk. You have this very real experience. You have something that nobody else has. Has anybody else talked about talking with God face to face? No. And we say, we're going to talk about John's comment in John 1 when we talk about Jesus. But this is a very basic for Moses. Who you are is rooted in your experience with God. And no one else has that. Okay, what does that have to do? Next slide. When God builds, has them build a temple, right? They're living in tents, so Moses has them build a tent, you know, and it's a tabernacle. And these are people who built pyramids at Pithom and Ramesses. These are people that built with bricks. They worked hard. Now they get to go out into the wilderness, and they get to build this nice tent for God. And they, you know, that it was nothing to them. They were good at it. They were skilled. They were highly trained. This time, they don't have somebody cracking a whip. They're going to build this tabernacle, and they get the tabernacle ready, and then God fills the tabernacle at the end in Exodus 40 with smoke. And so that's the idea. Smoke, the Shekinah, the glory of God is there, the glory of Yahweh. It's a smoke-filled tabernacle. The priests can't minister. Later on, as they live in cities, Solomon does the same thing. Well, when we lived in a tent, God lived in a tent, so we live in a building now. So we're going to build a building for God. Same thing happens in 1 Kings. As soon as they're done and Solomon gives his prayer, the dedication, smoke fills this temple and the priests can't minister. And what you have is this concept of the glory of God is smoke on the water, fire in the sky. It's a very basic. And so in the next slide, I love the commentary on Exodus. Terence Fritham says, what this means is that God lives right smack dab in the middle of them. I mean, this is a God who takes up residence with people. He tabernacles with them. He doesn't dwell at the edges of life. He dwells right in the center, and they watch this. And what's going on here? In the early days of the Hebrew Bible, there's this reminder, you have something very unique. You have a relationship with God. You have an experience of God. You have a God who lives among you. You have a God who hears you. You have a God who's passionate about you. Now think about this time of year at Christmas time. And that's what we should be talking about. You know, Jesus is Emmanuel. He is Emmanuel, right? He is God with us. It's not about whether you buy a big truck, you know, make your family happy by buying them a big vehicle. Where do these people work that they can buy? You know, that one commercial where the guy buys the big truck and the SUV, and I'm like, where does this guy? L'Oreal said, where do they work? Where do they live? They're young people. Man, we're in our 50s. We can't do that. And I'm looking and go, what kind of job does this guy have? You know, but that's kind of the message They don't tell you that they're going to have a headache and a heart attack when they get the bill to pay off the debts in January. And that's what this time of year has become. It's about buying stuff and getting stuff. Advent Conspiracy says give one gift less and take the savings and put it towards putting a water well in. When we first started that 10 years ago, we were down at Imago Dei and they were doing a lot of the trainings. And they would say, people are going to complain, you know, but just tell them it's one gift less. And we actually, you know, as a church that didn't have a lot of money, we really didn't have that much problem. But I did hear people say, well, you know, the only time I give my kids stuff is at Christmas. But we very quickly realized one gift less. And as people took one gift less and found out $3,000 later, we're able to build a well. And their kids were all excited. And then in July when we would send the video of, hey, this is where the well went. You remember the well? Remember what you got at Christmas? No, but I remember we built a well. Yeah, there you go. 6 months later, your toy's already broken, but you remember a well. You remember helping people. That was the whole point of Advent Conspiracy. It's a conspiracy to say this time of year is supposed to be about God's presence, not God's presence. It's about the presence of God. That's who we are. That's what makes us unique as people of God, that we have this presence with God. Now, the next slide is then we ask, you know, because as a, you know, that's important. What is a relationship? What does it mean to have a relationship with God? It's not about buying stuff. It's not about getting stuff. Relationships aren't making people happy by giving them stuff. We give because we love people and we care about them, but how we treat our family, how we feel about our family is not measured in how many gifts we give or whether we give gifts. I think sometimes that affects us as givers more. We have to give this when a lot of times people are like, I'm not looking for that. I did a lot of marriage counseling over the years, and I teach. I've taught pastoral counseling at it's Portland Seminary now. It was George Fox Evangelical Seminary back then. But as I've taught and done sessions, I find that kids are the ones that are okay with mom and dad just being around. Mom and dad are the ones that think they got to provide, you know, and it's because they feel guilty because they can't be there. And I think that's one of the things that we go back to. A relationship is not based on how much I give, how happy I make you with what I give. A relationship is based on how much time I'm with you, being with you. The very basics of relationship is about presence, my being with you, my being there. And this time of year, man, our marketing and our consumerism, man, and our materialism, it just goes out the, you know, goes through the roof. Because people are like, yeah, hey, if you want a good relationship, give a lot of stuff. Because the consumers need to make money this time of year. And it's important as Christians that we stop and think, wait a minute, what is this all about? Who are we? It is about Jesus. But Jesus is that basic. The next slide, we have this wonderful comment from the Apostle John. In the next slide there, here we go. It comes up. Oh, I sent you the old slides. I already cut that one out. Go ahead, one more. There we go. Nope, one more. Sorry. Okay. We're getting, there we go. He knows what he's doing. I'm the one that doesn't. John chapter 1. I love this, or Matthew chapter 1, I'm sorry, where Matthew is confronted with an issue. What do I do? Man, I'm engaged to this woman, and she comes home, and she says she's pregnant, and she says she's pregnant with the Holy Spirit. I mean, this is an old story in the ancient world. They weren't expecting Jesus to come this way. They were expecting Jesus to come as a king. They were not expecting him to come as a baby to a female who's a part of a poor family and whose husband or future husband was part of a blue-collar poor. He was a construction worker. He was poor. They weren't expecting it to come this way. And so she comes up and says, I'm pregnant. Everybody would know what happened. Yeah, you just don't want to admit that you slept around. Or you don't want to admit that a Roman soldier raped you, because this is occupied Palestine at the time. And what's Joseph do? He's in a quandary. What am I going to do? And his take is, I'm going to divorce her quietly. I don't want to bring shame on her. And so he's going through this motion, and then the angel comes in and he says, hey, take her. This is an old text. This is back in the Hebrew Bible. This is a text where a king was struggling with what to do, and the prophet Isaiah said, you need to have faith in God. You need to hang in there. A child's going to be born, and all your problems are going to be solved. And that's what's happening here. The virgin will conceive and give birth to a son, and they'll call him Emmanuel, which is God with us. How is Joseph going to get through this very tough time? He's going to realize God's with me. God's going to be. I mean, this young man, and I don't believe he was an old guy. I believe he was a young man. I mean, he takes his family to Egypt. They go on the run. He's running from a king. I mean, imagine how awful this must have been. And then I stop and think about this young guy. He made the decision to obey God, and he's part of the change of history. I mean, what if he'd have said, "No, this is too much, man. I mean, I want somebody. I want my own kids. I want my first son to be mine." No, he doesn't do that, man. He goes on ahead and he's obedient because he realizes that this is about relationship. This is about faithfulness. And in the next slide, where the apostle John tells us that there's the presence. I love this text, John chapter 1. The Word became flesh and what? Dwelt among us. That word dwell is the word tabernacle. Man, God was in it. When we lived in tents, the smoke came in a tent. When we lived in buildings, the smoke came in a building. But now, as human beings in occupied Palestine, where Romans are in charge and life really stinks, and almost all of us are poor except the 3% of the rich who are taking advantage of all of us. That's how occupied Palestine was. God has no clue what it's like to be in my body. Well, guess what? He became flesh and tabernacle. But they didn't see smoke on the water. They didn't see fire in the sky. They saw Jesus. And I love what John says. Man, we saw his glory. We saw his face. The next slide, 1 John, he's trying to tell people, we touched him. I mean, imagine the apostle John. Man, that guy, I'm looking forward to meeting him. Because I'm going to tell him first. I read your books, all five of them, right? And what five did we think he wrote? Gospel of John. Come on, it's easy. 1 John, 2 John, 3 John, John's greatest hits, John, and then the fourth one, Revelation. All right, so we can say I read all five of your books, buddy. I mean, that was going to be a great day. But I tell you, this must have been a guy to tell people we touched him. You know, all the priests ran when the smoke filled the tent. All the priests ran when the smoke filled the building. We didn't run. We got to touch him. We got to sit by the fire and talk with him. We got to watch him, his eyes tear up as he held little children. We got to watch him as he talked to women. We got to watch him as he helped a woman in adultery and told the guys, you know, if you got the first sin, throw the first stone. I mean, we got to watch him as he confronted the Pharisees, and I could just see him just in their face going at it. I mean, just think of John. We got to touch him. We have this experience. Now you know why the apostles were so bold. We have a basic, man, we have a smoke on the water experience. This is a fire in the sky. This is God. We heard the voice of God. John, in 1 John, or in John 1, says no one has ever seen God. And we always argue about, well, what does that mean? He's doing what Moses did. Who else has got this kind of an experience? We do. And we tell you about that. Who else got to touch God? Nobody. We're going to tell you about it. And even the early church had the same basic idea. We have a relationship with God. We know God. We've communicated with God. We've touched God. And so on the next slide, as we talk about Advent conspiracy, and what we've been saying at Agape over the last few weeks, is that this time of year is about building our experience with God. And I know in a lot of churches of Christ have said, well, Christmas is a pagan holiday. No, it's actually a Christian holiday. It's just been taken over by the pagans. I think probably the one that sticks out the most, anybody ever seen A Christmas Carol? What's the famous phrase that old Ebenezer Scrooge says? Bah humbug. He was a Puritan. The Puritans are the ones that outlawed Christmas in England and even in the United States. They made kids go to school on Christmas. You guys think you have it bad. Back in the old days, in the 1600s, 1700s, 1800s, kids had to go to school on Christmas Day. And it was because they hated Christmas. They felt it was pagan. So because they, you know, Christmas caroling, that was harassment. Did you know that? Now bring us a figgy pudding. Now bring us a figgy pudding. Now bring us a figgy pudding and bring it out. And then we won't go till we get some. What they would do is they would go and they would sing till somebody gave them beer, alcohol, money, food. And it was a way of the poor getting, you know, getting one day that they could take advantage of the rich. When the Puritans outlawed it, it became a time when drunkenness, carousing, you know, 9 months after Christmas, you had this high birth rate. So a lot of stuff was going on. And what the churches did was said, man, we got to get control of this again. Because in the old days, Christians would baptize a lot of people on Christmas Day. They would do a lot of preaching. So what they did was they brought it back. And what Christmas has always been a battlefield for people's hearts. And I believe today, Christmas is still a battlefield for people's hearts. The church can either say, let the consumers have it, or we can say, we're going to fight for people's hearts. Advent conspiracy, in the religion of consumerism, the thing we desire becomes a symbol of whatever meaning it insinuates. Because we buy into the meaning, we believe we have become more significant, able to rise above the circumstances, frustrations, and mundane moments in our everyday lives. In short, our consumerism tells us that we'll be reborn. How many people believe that if I buy this, my life will be better, right? Or how many people feel so much happier when they buy something, you see? That's what consumerism does. Consumerism says you can buy your way to happiness, which it promises much and delivers little. That's a big theme at Christmas time. Notice that. Consumerism, materialism, it's fighting for people's hearts. And as Christians, we have an opportunity to say, this holiday season elevates a very basic in our life. It's God with us. It's God among us. It's a baby born in a feed trough, not a beautiful, glorious crib. It's a baby born into a very crowded house where they laid him in a feed trough where the animals ate. It was no inn. It was a very crowded little home. This is a time when shepherds who weren't even righteous enough to testify in court got the opportunity to see Jesus when all of the kings of the world did not take that opportunity. This is about a young lady who's poor being told by an angel, you're going to have a baby. And she believes. Right? This is about a construction worker, a poor construction worker, making the decision to be faithful and take care of this baby. That's what this holiday season's about. It's about presence. It's about being among people. It's not about consumerism. It's not about materialism. But I think that's a message we want to be sharing with people. You know, sometimes we say, hey, we got our church Christmas, and then we got the world Christmas, and so we celebrate our church Christmas in church, and then we go home, and we celebrate like the rest of the world. We need to be celebrating, as we need to be smoke on the water, fire in the sky people. We go out, and we bring that very basic, that this is a time of year when people are thinking about God, so I'm going to be present. The next slide, that's the question that I've been asking all year. How do we celebrate presence? Now, Kevin told me Agape Village was kind of on your radar. One of the things that we've been doing is helping in Portland to build homeless villages. And there's been 5 so far. Dignity Village was the first. We have people at our church who were in Dignity Village. We've helped to turn a lot of structures into tents and structures. Oh, go back there a second. This is Agape Village. It's I-205 and Powell. It's on the Church of the Nazarenes property there. And they've told the city, this is our property. We're going to put in, you know, 20 to 50 homes. And so we're part of a group that's building these little homes where homeless people can come. They can live. They live in community. They're able to develop relationships, manage themselves. We have caseworkers. But we're just seeing these villages pop up as we work. And one of the things that we're encouraging people to do is if you want to come out and work, or you want to donate, or if some of your Advent Conspiracy donations are going to go to this, it's going to go to helping us get these villages up, because the villages we're seeing people take care of. We've got people in our church who are in the villages. Somebody has bipolar, schizophrenia. I know if they're in a village, they're in a community rather than being on the street. And it's funny because, you know, we have groups come out from different parts of the country, and they'll come and work, and I tell them, if you go into a camp and you smell it, you think it's a skunk, it's not a skunk. It's marijuana you're smelling, you know. Yeah, okay, some of these camps are They're not the typical Christian college campuses that you, but we have kids that come in and they go and they work and they get to know a lot of the homeless folks and they make develop relationships, and some of them come to our church, some of them don't, but there's a real presence there. In fact, they named it Agape Village, not because of our church, but just because they said, well, Agape, Ron always says Agape means love, so this is a place of love. I'm impressed with what's going on, but these are things that we're sinking our time into in our project because we want to bring presence there. That when we go into these camps and we start talking with people or we start working, what we hear is, I don't see a lot of churches involved in this. I don't see a lot of ministers down here. I don't see a lot of Christians down here. And we say, that's a shame because these are places where we should be. We should be in these camps talking and helping and listening and working and case managing and trying to help do Bible studies and things like that. That's who we're called to be. As Christians, we bring that presence. This camp would not have smoke and fire unless God's people were there. And one of the wonderful things, at least about the Nazarene church there, is there are homeless people that were camping in that area that are now going to church there. They're going to their recovery groups. Three or four of them are helping to build. Some of these structures have been built by homeless folks that are working with a construction. I mean, it's amazing. That's presence. That's where the church needs to be. And in this time of year, whether it's giving to something like that or saying, we'll give, but we're also going to help in the year, we're going to be part of that, that's presence. And what we as Christians should always be thinking, but especially this time of year, how can we bring presence in people's lives? Not presence with a T, but presence. And that's the next slide. How can we bring presence in people's lives? Say, well, Christmas is in 2 days, okay? Okay, so in the next couple days, I want to encourage you to get on your knees tonight and say, God, put someone in my life that needs to know about you and help me be a presence there. And then see what happens. How many people are willing to talk about God or about Jesus this time of year? That means it's an open opportunity to share. Well, this is what Jesus means to me. This is what it means to be a Christian. You know, a couple weeks ago, a coworker, we were at a Portland United Against Hate, and we do a lot of work with the police about racism and so forth. Not a faith-based group, but they said, hey, they call me Pastor Ron, and I'd get tired of arguing. I'd just go, okay. They said, hey, Pastor Ron, I just need a prayer. And I said, okay, let's pray right now. And we did. We got up, and, you know, you don't do that they don't do that. That's not politically correct, but I said, you want a prayer? We'll pray. We prayed. Guy from the Congo was working. Man, beautiful prayer. His name was Ezekiel. Guy that was Muslim, he had a prayer, and it was really beautiful. And then the lady here, I don't know if she had a faith at all, but she just said, oh, this is neat, God. I pray for peace too. And it was just neat watching that prayer. And then one of the ladies there, her partner is, he's from Burundi. His dad died. She said, I don't know what to do. And I said, what can I do to help? So the next week, I'm in their home with a whole house full of Burundi and Rwanda refugees. We're having a memorial for the dad who was not able to come over. And we're praying. And you know, Lori and I would talk later on about that. So that's the idea of what it means to be present. I love that kind of ministry. Being in an office was fine. Yeah, being in a big church with an office, that was all neat, preaching about, you know, things that you read about. But to be in people's lives, that's presence. And think about all the opportunities you have to be present with people. And to just pray, to talk, to listen. What can I do to help you? Next time I see you, I'm going to ask that person, how's your dad doing? How's your mom doing? How are things going? I want you to know I've been praying for you. Watching what happens in people's lives. That's presence. That's smoke on the water, fire in the sky. Moses was able to say, hey, before we go in the promised land, remember, you got a relationship with God. And we need to carry that with us. That's what John's saying with us. We have a relationship with God. How do we carry that with us? So this time of year, think about the people who need presence and that you can bring in their lives. And then that launches you into the new year. How can I bring presence to people's lives? Every one of you has an opportunity to bring presence to people's lives, that they might see the power of God, the glory of God. And they might say, I haven't seen smoke and fire, but I see the glory of God here in a room where we stood and we prayed and saw that powerful thing. So on the next slide, I just want to send you away with that picture. This is the time of year to think about presence, not presence, right? We'll have presence, we'll open presence, we'll do that, but we can bring presence to so many more people. That's a basic of who we are. That's a basic of who we've always been. So let's bow in a word of prayer. God, I thank you for this great day, and I praise you for your love and your mercy. And I see through your word that you've always been present, but you've called us to be present. You've brought presence in lives that are troubled, that are hurting, and you called us to bring presence to that as well. May we never confuse the two, the present with the presence. May we always remember that we are called to bring presence because you've brought presence in our lives. And as we celebrate the holidays, may we remember that there are those who need presence and that you can send us to them. And so I pray tonight every one of us will pray, Lord, help me to keep my eyes open to who needs presence. And I believe that you will prove that there are those who need them as much as they need you. And we thank you for this time, and thank you for my brothers and sisters in here. May God bless them this new year. In Jesus' name, amen.